Last week I made a passing comment about three words, and it was interesting to hear people talk at the door as we went out and about their experiences of what three words. Did you know there are three what three words in Abbotsham? Did anybody know that apart from, well, it was you that told me, wasn't it? There are what three words outside the village hall by the defibrillator, is that it? And what are those words? three words. Lessons in leadership is our subject today. What three words describe leaders then? You can shout out if you want. What three words would you think describes a good leader? Or a bad leader, come to that. What sort of words? This is motivational speech. You should have a flipboard here. I should be writing all your answers down. And
Authority. Servant to all.
Understanding.
Humility.
Determination.
Kindness.
This is a better sermon than the one I've got, actually. Let me. Well, I've got three words for leaders. And I've written them down. Marge, Jeff and Jenny. How about that? No, I just made that up, really. But we will be looking at three words later on. But what makes a good parent, do you think? What makes or a good teacher? Is it... Is he a parent? Is a good parent someone who disciplines you and says... Or is a good parent someone who gives you a free rein and says, off you go? I think someone said caring, didn't we? Is it? I remember my sister's 2 years, 3 years older than me, and I remember asking my dad, can I stay out till 9:30? He said, no, I want you home at 9:30. And she said, but Dad, I'm 17. And he said, I know, that's why I want you home by 7:30. Now, she would have said, what a bad dad you are. But in the light of things, we think, well, no, that's probably a good thing. What's a bad teacher? Is a bad teacher someone who says, I want your homework? Or is a good teacher someone who doesn't give you homework and lets you get on that? You know, there's good teachers, bad teachers, good parents. What makes a good foreman? Well, the foreman in our day, they're called team leaders now, aren't they? In Ben's day, they're team leaders, but foreman. I tell you what makes a good foreman on the railway. Whenever there's an incident, they're in the back room. Unable to make a comment, it says. What makes a good politician? Let's ask Boris, shall we? Let's ask Liz Truss. What makes a good preacher? Now then, there's someone who don't ramble. Yeah. What makes a good husband? Someone who just takes it on the chin. There is a story of a preacher of two people going out after a sermon. And two ladies, actually, and they said, wasn't he good this morning? Wasn't he good this morning? And the other one said, yes, he was. He made me feel awful. He made me feel awful. I'll ramble just a little bit more to tell you another story about a bishop. And I believe this is a true story of a bishop who was given, like we're given topics and subjects, he was given, and it was a really difficult topic that he was given, which everybody was confused about, and he was given this topic, and he preached, and he gave the, not just the Greek and the Hebrew of it, he gave the Aramaic of it as well, and and at the end of the service, the deacon shook his hand, the elders, and said, you know, Bishop, we were confused before, but even now we are confused at an even deeper level. Well, our title, Lessons in Leadership. We know from the reading that it's to do with Peter. It's and without doubt, Peter was a natural-born leader. There's no doubt about that. He was in the Gospels, Peter is mentioned most often after Jesus than anybody else. Jesus is the main character in the four Gospels, but after Jesus, Peter is the main man. He is the one who has more to say than anybody else in the Gospels. In fact, he often blurts things out without thinking about it. The verb that or the adjective used to describe Peter is impulsive, impetuous. He's the one who answers. He's the he blurts out without really putting his brain in gear. If Jesus had a question, it's normally Peter who answers. He acts as spokesperson. He's Captain Mannering. He's in charge. Even if you turn a page in your Bible to Acts chapter 1, even at Pentecost, or after Pentecost in Acts chapter 1, it's Peter, Acts chapter 1 verse 15, it's Peter who chairs the meeting. They had to have a meeting to replace Judas Iscariot. They needed 12 apostles, 12 deacons, if you like, 12 leaders, and Peter, Acts chapter 1, verse 15, in those days Peter stood up among the believers and said, brothers, the scripture has to fit, we need someone to replace Judas. Acts chapter 2 and verse 14, the day of Pentecost itself, it's Peter who stands up and preaches. Chapter 2 and verse 14, then of the Acts of the Apostles. Then Peter stood up with the 11, raised his voice and addressed, he is the leader without doubt. But what an unusual choice Peter was. He was uneducated. We can say that with a degree of certainty. In all probability, Peter couldn't read or write. In all probability, I don't want any letters, I don't want anybody. He was a fisherman. He wasn't a scribe, could scribe, could scribble, could write. A fisherman could fish. He'd not been to school in that sense. He was quick-tempered, we know that. He was very quick-tempered. On one occasion, in Easter week that we've been looking at, John's Gospel chapter 18 and verse 10, he saw things weren't going his way. And so he drew his... Do you remember the story? He drew his sword and, in his quick temper, and he just lashed out. He was a better fisherman than swordsman, because instead of splitting his head, he just took the ear off this little lad, the servant. He was impulsive. He chopped the boy's ear off. He took action without really thinking about it. If he'd have thought it through, he would have thought, well, there's only a few of us, and look at these soldiers here. And sometimes it's best to retreat, isn't it? Sometimes it's best to, when you realise that you're outnumbered, sometimes it's best to keep quiet. But not Peter. He didn't engage his brain. He was quick-tempered. He used bad language as well. He cursed a bit, did Peter? He was a bit of a rough diamond. He was argumentative. He was argumentative in the upper room. Maundy Thursday, the day before Good Friday, you remember this story, we've looked at it, or you've looked at it, Jesus washes the disciples' feet. What did Peter say? Chapter 13 and verse 8, he said, no, Lord, you're not going to wash my feet. I'll not let you wash my feet. He argued with Jesus. Later on in Acts of the Apostles, chapter 10, he's told to go and meet Cornelius, a Gentile. What does he say? He says, no, he's arguing again. He said, no, I'm not going to visit. I'm not involved with Gentiles. I don't want anything to do with... And he has that vision of the sheet coming down with all sorts of unclean and clean animals. And Jesus has to say, the risen Lord has to say, kill and eat. Don't you dare call anything. Don't you argue with me, Peter. Don't you call anything that I have made unclean. He was argumentative. He wasn't the best choice for a leader. In one sense, he was argumentative. He had a temper. He used bad language. He made poor decisions. He was a bit mercurial. He was a bit up and down, a bit like the temperature, a bit like the 1 minute he's up. You remember in Matthew's Gospel at Caesarea Philippi, he made that great confession and he said, thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God. He's on a spiritual high. He's up there. And Jesus says, well done, Peter. Flesh and blood, man hasn't revealed this to you, but my Father in heaven. It's upon this rock, upon this statement, that thou art the Christ, the Messiah, that I will build my church. Well done, Peter. You've done really. And 7 verses later, get thee behind me, Satan. He's like the grand old Duke of York. When he's up, but when he's down, he's down. He goes from hot to cold, from one thing to the other. One thing to the other. Get thee behind me. So lessons in leadership. We can learn from leaders. Leaders can be an example or a warning, can't they? They can learn us how to do things or how not to do things, really. A good example or a bad example. I've put a little note to myself, NB. I want you to note this very well. There is a big difference between natural work leaders, political leaders, and church leaders. There's a big difference. In fact, there's a world of difference between business world, political world, and church world when it comes to leadership. Natural leaders, more often than not, are full of themselves. They are very assertive. This is the way to do it. Did Boris listen to his advisors? I see we've got to keep the red flag flying in this court. But did he listen to his cabinet? A leader, a prime minister, if you like. I'm just using Boris. I'm not giving my politics away because I'm... Is there such a word, apolitical? I couldn't, because whoever we vote for it... Anyway, we're the losers, aren't we? I probably will get some letters, having said that. But he didn't. My way. You do it my way. Do as I say. Work leaders, they are ruthless. They are assertive. You're fired, Lord Sugar says, doesn't he? That happens, doesn't it? I know it's the first time you've been late in 27 years, but you're fired. You're on a warning. They are ruthless. This is the business world, the political world. And we find industry leaders as well. Oh, give me the contract. It's been on our news and it's been down here as well. Hinkley Point C. Give me the contract for Hinkley Point C. I'll not let you down. I'll get the job done. I'll get it done on time. I'll get it done in budget. You can realize others will let you down, other companies. Give it to me. Give the contract to me. I won't let you down. Probably being a bit silly with that illustration, but... What's all this to do with Peter? Let's relate it to Peter. He's recorded in all four gospel writers. It's recorded, Lord, even if all these other disciples desert you, I will lay down my life for you. Though all forsake you, I never will. Big words. Big words. My contract will be delivered on time. It will be delivered in budget. You can rely on me. Big words. Big words from Peter. I won't. And then a little girl speaks to him and says, by a charcoal fire. And she says, you know, I think he, in the shadows of that fire, I think he was one of those. Aren't you a Galilean? And this big man who says you can rely on me, I won't let you down. We know what he does. He starts cursing and denying that he ever knew him. This natural leader who boasted, others will let you down, not me. And then the rooster, the cock, began to crow. He denied. He let him down. What about self-sufficiency? Peter was a fisherman, wasn't he? He was uneducated, yeah, but he knew how to fish. That was his livelihood, so I guess he was a good fisherman if he made a living out of it. And there's several stories about fishing in the scriptures. Not least, that's why I read the one before Angela gave us the proper reading to put it in context. The story, been out all night and caught nothing. And then in chapter 21, verse 3, it says, so they went out, got into the boat, but that night they caught nothing. So early next morning, Jesus was on the shore. The disciples didn't realize, and Jesus said, have you caught any fish? And they said, no. So Jesus said, throw your nets on the right side of the boat, and you'll find some. And you'll find some. If Peter had recognized Jesus, he could have said, I'm the fisherman, Rout. You're a carpenter. What are you? You telling me how to fish? We've been out all night. Night is the time to catch the fish. In the daytime, the water is too hot, so the fish go down to the bottom. But at night time, when it's a bit cooler, the fish come to the surface. I'm the fisherman. I'm the professional here in this setup. You telling me, you carpenter? You see the arrogance. Then he says, but nevertheless, at your command, I'll do it. And in that same story, verse 6, he put down the net, and when they did, they were unable to haul in the net because it was because of the large number of fish. We see it happening in our lessons in leadership, in spiritual leadership, arrogance and assertiveness. Peter is learning. What three words? What three words? Humility. Someone said humility. Submission. Humility and submission. Humility. You're not as big as you thought you were, Peter, when this little girl can question you. You're not the big man that you thought you were when this little girl calls you out. Your fishing methods failed that night, so do it my way. Humility to the little girl. Submission to Jesus. Do it my way. And the third of the what three words I want to share with you this morning, humility, submission, and love is the third word for a leader, someone who knows about humility, knows about submission, but knows about love as well. We've not looked at this, but spiritual leaders have to love the Lord and to love the flock and to love people. The picture changes from fishing to farming, from looking after or catching fish to looking after sheep, if you like, because three times in the reading that Angela gave for us, the Lord asks Peter, do you love me? Do you love me? Three times, to possibly mirror the three denials that Peter had made. Have you ever been reminded of a place and of a former incident by smell? By smell. When your children were small and you perhaps had, smaller, and you had to go to a parents' night, and you went back to the school that you went to. And as soon as you go in, that school dinner smell, and it brings it all back, doesn't it? And you think, and it's the smell that brings it back. I went to hospital this week I did a Good Samaritan act, actually, and I took someone to Barnstable Hospital. And when I got there and went into and the smell, and it brought it all back. Because did I ever tell you about the... but it does, doesn't it? It brings it all back. Twice in the New Testament... Well, many times we have mention of fire, but only twice we have a mention of a specific fire, a charcoal fire. Only twice, a charcoal fire. Turn back in John's Gospel, chapter 18 and verse 18. This is only a little detail, but bearing in mind what we've just said about smell, bringing things back, bringing memories back, chapter 18 and verse 18 says, it was cold, and the servants and the officials stood round a fire. Now, that word fire in the Greek is charcoal fire, not just a fire, a charcoal fire. They'd made to keep themselves warm, and Peter was standing with them, warming himself by that charcoal fire. You can smell a wood fire, can't you? If somebody's got the wood fire, you can and say, oh, they've got the wood burner going tonight. And you can smell this was a specific smell, this charcoal fire where Peter was standing for his denial. Well, when we read the denial story and chapter 21 and verse 9 that we read earlier, it says, when they landed the fish, Peter, and this is chapter 21 and verse 9, when they brought this huge catch of fish, 153 large fish, the commentators tell us there's 153 different types of fish in the Sea of Galilee. Now, I don't know whether that's true or not, but I don't believe everything you read. But I also heard that someone was particularly enduring a very boring sermon that went on and on and on and on and on and a bit further on and on. And so they counted 1 plus 2 plus 3 plus 4 plus 5 and 1 to 17 adds up to 153. That must have been a very boring sermon that day, wasn't it, for someone to do that? But anyway, they come in, it's just so that you find it back where we are. Chapter 21 and verse 9, it says this, when they landed these 153 fish, they saw a fire of burning charcoal. It was the same smell. It was charcoal. It's only twice that it's mentioned in the whole of Scripture. The charcoal when he denied, the charcoal when he's reinstated. Just a detail, but basically the three questions perhaps prompted the same thing. Do you love me, Peter? You've denied me, but do you love me? Okay, he uses a strong word in the original. Do you love me? Are you devoted to me? And Peter says, well, I like you. It's love and like is the difference, and that's why Peter got a little bit niggly, really. I like you as a friend. And the command is exactly the same for all three. Feed my lambs, that's the young sheep. Feed my sheep, the older sheep, and tend the flock. And that's the mark of a spiritual leader. That is the mark of a pastor. He has love for the flock, whether they are lambs, little ones, new in the faith, or whether they are sheep, more mature, older ones. They are to tend the flock. They are to care, to look after them, to tend to them. I've said this before only once in this from this pulpit, a quote that I heard many years ago. People don't care how much you know, they need to know how much you care. And I think that's true, isn't it? People don't need to know that you've got degrees, how much you know. They don't care about that. They need to know how much you care. And that is the mark of a pastor. Someone who cares. You see, with sheep, we think, oh, we've been out shepherding. There is a word shepherding. We've been out looking after sheep, if you like, this week. And you see the little lambs, they're out now. They've been indoors, actually, because of the wet weather. But they're out frolicking, jumping about and having a great time in the warm sunshine by the green pastures and the still waters. But for the shepherd, you know, sometimes it means leaving the 99 in the fold and going after the one that's gone away, that's gone stray, that's gone missing. It means putting yourself out, really, going after the straying one, the erring one. I mean going up the mountainside, metaphorically, well, really, you know, battling the wolves and the enemies and the things that would prevent. You know, we can forgive much preaching if we've got good pastoring. I've heard people's testimonies. I've even heard it said of my preaching. We had a baptism in our church, and the girl stood up and she said, I gave my life to Christ. She said, I say girl, she's retired now, isn't she, Sheila? She was the head cook at the school, and she said, when I was 60 and I gave my life to Christ one Sunday morning, Alan Thorpe was preaching. I've no idea what he said. You won't know. Well, you will know. I spend hours with my books and studying and Jeff and other preachers, you know. And that was the response I got. I've got no idea what he said. But he kept, it came through. I think someone said what three were caring. It came through caring. We can forgive much preaching, much of our failures in our preaching. But the pastoring, that's what folks remember. The day I prepared this, I went to the post office in Nailsea, and one of the girls, one of the women behind the counter, used to live in Biddeford, used to work at Biddeford post office. She didn't live there, she lived in Georgium as a growing up, and she said, did you ever know a Reverend Brian Strange? So I said, no, I'm sorry, I don't know. She said, he was, as I was growing up as a little girl, she said, he would, if he saw us in the street, out of context, you know, not in church, not in Sunday school, out of context, out in the, he would always say, hello. And I'm afraid I can walk by people. It might be my time of life, really. I can just walk by people and say, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't see you. But he cared. I mean, I care, but I'm just getting old and can't see. But he cared. He cared. And she remembered. She remembered that. And that's what people remember. They don't remember what you preached. They don't remember the 3 points that you tried to get over. But they remember that there was care. There was that love. So lessons in humility. Well, we don't have all the answers. Lessons in leadership. Humility, we don't have all the answers. Submission, we do fail. But love, devotion to the Lord and devotion to the flock. Did Peter learn his lesson? If you've got a Bible, turn to 1 Peter chapter 5 as we round things off. 1 Peter chapter 5, and I'll just read this with you. The first half a dozen verses. Peter, remember this is many years after this story. Peter wrote his letters. Peter's now an old man. He's not a young fisherman in the prime of life. He's an old man. He's an experienced man. And he says this. He says, to the elders, to the leaders among you, I appeal to you as a fellow elder. He'd learnt humility. He said, I'm not better than it. I'm just a fellow elder. I'm not the prime minister. I'm just a minister. I'm just a fellow elder. I've learnt my place to the leaders as a fellow leader. He'd learnt humility. But he says, I'm qualified because I know of Christ's sufferings that Jesus suffered for me. I've accepted him as my Lord and my Saviour. And he says, verse 2, be shepherds. That's the word pastor. Pastor, God's flock. Be pastors, be shepherds of God's flock that's under your care. The ones that you should be caring for, the ones that you should be loving and looking after. And then down in verse 5, he says, be submissive. Clothe yourselves with humility. Did Peter learn his lesson? Well, I think he did. In older life, as a more mature man, he's saying, be submissive. Be humble. But you know, Peter, like us, is only human. Back in John 21, when he was reinstated, I wasn't going to actually say this, but Angela read it so vividly that Peter went back to his old ways, you know, straight away. He looked round and he saw John. And he wasn't thinking about himself anymore, Peter. He said, what about him? And Jesus asked to say, mind your own business. What's that to you? What's that? What's his spiritual life got to do with you, Peter? Just botting it, quite frankly. Peter, it's a learning process. None of us get it right all the time. In fact, many of us, we're a work in progress, aren't we? And I am waffling a bit now, you're right, because as I say, I wasn't going to mention it. But just to round the story off, I think we'll have the video now, Nick. And just a little video which will explain some, if you are confused at a deeper level, this will bring it back to reality, I think.
Peter As Jesus spoke to his disciples for the last time, he explained that he would be taken from them to suffer and die. He warned them that the events about to happen would be so painful and so frightening that they would all run away and leave him to face these horrible things all alone. Peter, who had once claimed that Jesus was the Messiah, argued, "Though the rest of them fall away, I will never leave you." But Jesus knew better. "The truth is," Jesus said, "you will deny me 3 times before the rooster crows in the morning." Just as Jesus said it would, the night turned to terror as he was taken away. Peter, trying to follow Jesus at a distance, crouched in the shadows to hide near a warm fire. A young girl looked in his direction and asked, "Weren't you with Jesus?" Peter responded harshly, "I don't know what you mean." Peter quickly got up and rushed away. Later that night, another servant girl recognized Peter and announced, "This man was indeed with Jesus." Peter denied it and said, "I don't know the man." Another person standing nearby insisted, "You are one of them. I recognize your accent." Peter, becoming more and more upset, cried out, "Let me be cursed if I am lying to you. I do not know who you're talking about." When these words left his mouth, the rooster crowed. Remembering what Jesus had said, Peter began to cry bitter tears of hurt and regret. After the death of Jesus, the disciples were lost and confused about what to do. Peter was tired of sitting around feeling guilty, so he decided to do something he was good at, fishing. Peter told the others of his plan, and some of them decided to join his fishing trip. They fished through the night, but they caught nothing. Early in the morning, exhausted and disappointed, they finally gave up and headed back toward the shore. They rowed toward land, and as the morning light was just appearing, the disciples could barely make out what looked like a man standing on the shore. The mysterious figure called to them, "Children, did you catch any fish?" Puzzled, they answered the stranger, "No." The man then said, "Cast the net off the right side of the boat, and then you'll catch something." Shrugging their shoulders, the disciples did as the stranger suggested. The nets filled with so many fish, the men could not pull them all in. One of the disciples recognized who had been talking to them, and he cried out, "It's the Lord!" Peter was so excited, he jumped out of the boat, diving into the water to reach him. Once all of the disciples made it to the shore, Jesus invited them to join him by the fire for a breakfast of fish. They talked and laughed together like they had done so many times before, except now the fellowship was much sweeter. Their hero and master had defeated death, and he was back to share the victory. When they had all finished eating, Jesus turned to Peter and asked him, "Do you love me?" Peter replied, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." Jesus asked again, "Do you love me?" Peter replied the same, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." When Jesus asked Peter a third time if he loved him, a feeling of sadness washed over Peter. He had failed in his love before when he denied Jesus. What could he say now that would prove any different? But he did love Jesus, so he responded, "Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you." Jesus' death on the cross had shown Peter what sacrificial love looked like. Peter knew now that his life was not his own, but that it had been bought with a price. Peter was transformed. Knowing he was ready to love fully, Jesus said to him, "Feed my sheep and follow me."
The hymn 1008, "The Lord's My Shepherd, I'll Not Want. He makes me lie in pastures green. He leads me by the still, still waters. His goodness restores my soul." 1008. The Lord's my shepherd, I'll not want. He makes me green. He leads me by the still, still.